Today's show, the playoff of Northern Aggression winds up in Atlanta. How's the SEC dealing with it? How Caitlin Clark may have impacted the 2025 college football season. And is there a threat to March Madness?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Generally, if you're a drug dealer, you're not also delivering pizzas.
Russ Dellinger.
The domino toppler is Mr. Bill 11. Perfect.
And SI's Pat 40.
You go to the door with great trepidation, and then they're like, here's your pizza.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It was 3 years ago, January 10th, 2022, to be exact, so a little over 3 years ago, that Indianapolis hosted the college football playoff national championship game. It was the first time the title game moved to the north. Now, the title games have never been forced to play in the bowl framework. So we've had some games in Tampa and maybe some other places, or San Jose. But Indianapolis got to host it, and it was the first time that the title game was in Big Ten country. And in a sign of dominance, the game featured the Georgia Bulldogs beating the Alabama Crimson Tide. It was essentially the SEC championship game. I think it literally was the rematch. Just played in Indianapolis, where the Big Ten likes to play its championship game. And it steps from the famed downtown Indianapolis Steak and Shake, which I believe is the spiritual home of the Big Ten. I don't know why, but that's what I think.
I'm not going to dispute you. I've been there enough times.
It's something the Big Ten people, yeah. They can't quit Indianapolis because of that Steak and Shake and St. Elmo. They say St. Elmo's, but it's really the late night Steak and Shake. Yeah. And look, a Frisco burger will go a long way in Big Ten country. But
what is the spiritual home of the SEC, by the way? Is it like
that's the Waffle
like
House.
Saws, Waffle Barbecue, House. Waffle House.
Waffle
okay.
House on right. Hoover, in Hoover.
Hoover. Yeah, right, yeah, something like that. It's right. A Waffle House very somewhere. Good. There is a Waffle House in downtown Atlanta, a few of them. But I don't know. I think it's something like that.
Or I was thinking a barbecue joint, like the little Alabama barbecue joint, but the Waffle House makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
The Hilton Garden Inn where Cam Newton worked out his deal. Allegedly. Starkville Hilton Garden Inn. Anyway, Georgia beat Alabama that day, and it was total dominance of the SEC. And if you had told me 3 years later that we would be having the national championship game in Atlanta, and not only would the roles be mostly reversed, we have Ohio State of the Big Ten and Notre Dame an independent, but a northern team if there ever was one, playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is where the SEC plays its championship game. And it is not only that happening, but it is the second consecutive year there is no SEC team in the championship game after Michigan and Washington played last year in Houston. Total reversal of fortune. Now, 3 years ago, I would have thought, I'm not sure how many Big Ten teams will ever make the championship game. Michigan had this great season and broken through and gotten absolutely bulldozed by Georgia in that playoff. Maybe Ohio State could compete. I certainly thought that. Notre Dame, forget it. Brian Kelly was leaving to LSU because he thought, I need to go somewhere where I have a chance to win a national championship, compete for national championships. But everything has flipped. And we've discussed many reasons why that is. Transfer portal, NIL, maybe even this expanded playoff that gave Ohio State and Notre Dame a second chance. But for the ego of our friends in the South, for our friends in the SEC, I certainly believe their teams will be back. They will win titles. They will be in these games. But how much does this one hurt that not only is it two Northern teams, but it's right there in Atlanta, Pat?
Yeah, it's a blow to the considerable self-esteem of the SEC and its members. And again, you know, they were the ones that invented and I think may still be the only conference that chants for the whole conference, you know. And they love to exert conference-wide superiority. and or they're now 0-2 getting anybody in. And when the championship game is in Atlanta, that's a comeuppance for sure. I agree with you. Look, the SEC is still going to win plenty of titles, but we may not be going back to the days where they win 16 out of 17 or whatever the numbers were. And, you know, the LSU 2019 untouchable, Alabama 2020 untouchable, Georgia 2021-22 untouchable unless your name is Alabama. I mean, there was such a level of dominance there that the league was so far ahead of everyone, and it's changed. Rules have changed, formats changed, et cetera, as you noted. So I think that I'll be interested to hear from some man on the street types in Atlanta this weekend, see how they're feeling about this war of northern aggression coming home right there to roost in Atlanta and how they're handling it.
I wrote a little bit about this last week. I was focused mainly on the teams from the deep south, because Clemson has won a couple and Florida State won one. I think it was a span of 17 years where 16 of the 17 were programs from the deep south that had won the national championship. And a lot of those years, the program they beat in the championship game was from the deep south, that six state kind of region. So it's crazy that we go 2 years in a row after going 16 of the 17 with a champion, going 2 years in a row without any program from the SEC or from that region in the championship game. And I interviewed a bunch of people, but one of the people was David Cutcliffe, who works for the league. You see, special assistant to the commissioner, kind of overseeing football stuff. He said he can't go in the grocery store in Birmingham without getting a, "Hey, coach, what's wrong with us?" from the SEC folks there in Birmingham. You know, Dan, I think, you know, we've beat this in the ground, but the reasons are pretty simple. And when I called around to ask kind of experts, if you will, about why this has happened, it's not coincidental that it lines up with the NIL and the transfer portal. That's big surprise, right? It's spreading out the talent. Players are not sitting as long on the bench at these major conference schools where they attended, because they are from that area, right? They're leaving, and they're leaving for playing time. They're leaving perhaps for more money. They're leaving, and Andy Shores, who's an antitrust economist based in California, who's pretty integral with, you know, NCAA matters. He called it, you know, I think a few days before, Dan, the NIL came into existence in July 1, 2021. You wrote a story with Andy, quoting Andy, about, you know, when you don't pay the players, he said, you know, you have a restricted playoff system. It is designed to concentrate the talent. And he said a lot of the predictions, obviously, for NIL and the transfer portal were, if you let Alabama pay, then they'll get the best talent. And as he told me, the prediction he made to you, you know, that the day before the NIL became a thing, was that improvements in competitive balance will come, because the talent will spread itself out in the pecking order. He kind of said could change a little bit, and boy, we've seen it.
Yeah, I think as he really pointed out, he kind of thought it would stay even, but maybe go a little bit more, and it actually went further. I think a lot of some cynical fans or ones that pay attention would say that there was payments going on.
You think?
So side was, come on. Yeah, I know. And then, but I also think that was a little overblown, because I haven't seen, you know. There were some payments other places too.
They drove nice cars in other places too.
Yeah, not every. Yeah, just the.
It just means
student.
More in a certain area, though.
Just means more in a certain area. You know how much it means? It means David Cutcliffe not only is recognized at a grocery store, but the people at the grocery store know he works for the SEC.
Yes.
Go ahead. Name your associate Big Ten commissioner. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Your former, like, slightly above average coach in the league.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You might be like, "Hey, isn't that David Cutcliffe? Where did he? Is that a coach?" And not going, "Hey, that guy's in charge of this." Yeah, so why it just does mean more in the South, and they're going to have to come back. No, it's funny. I did read, I was reading the transcripts from the press conference before that game, and both Saban and Smart warned that it would just be the haves and have nots would. They're both sort of like, well, I'm not, you know, we're not really think we might need some keep an eye on this, but the gap is going to expand. I think they both were a little bit starry eyed at the concept. I don't think they quite saw it coming, but
they failed to mention is the gap will expand, but it's not the gap we're talking about, right? It's not the top 10 pulling away from everybody. It's like, you know, maybe the top 40 or top 50 pulling away from everybody else in the G5. But we've seen it. We've said it over and over. The talent at the top is for sure spreading out. And you could look at some of these Big Ten teams. Look at Ohio State and what they did in the transfer portal, getting some of SEC's players. You know, look at what Indiana did to build itself up using the portal. So we have plenty of examples. Notre Dame too, right? How many grad transfers does Notre Dame have that play eight. Integral roles? Yeah, right.
There you go. All eight. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, when Michigan got throttled by Georgia in the semifinals in 2021. If that's when maybe things started to flip a little bit and big people in the Big Ten, like specifically Michigan, are like, well, we're going to pay to keep our guys in school another year and we're making a run at this thing.
I thought this was one of the biggest moments, and we'll see how history plays out. But after the second year when they lost to TCU, Michigan launched the One More Year Fund.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I screwed up my ears. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there was this sensibilities in the North, in the Midwest, which I was arguing against was stupid and non-competitive of like, well, we don't want, I think they're the spirit of the rule. They were still trying to like dip their toe in. And other schools smartly, like Miami, maybe Tennessee, some of the others were like, let's go. And that was the smart play. And there was still this bit in the Midwest of like, well, we talked Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame was on our podcast telling us this would be the ruination. And, Notre Dame, there was always this bit. Notre Dame will leave. The father, Jenkins, I believe, said, you know, we can't be a part of if this professionalizes. And we always, you know, the great Jim Delaney quote where they were going to take Big Ten football Division III. Remember that one?
Yeah.
I wrote many columns laughing at that. Sure. I'm sure Ohio State fan is happy to go play Mount Union this weekend because Jim Delaney is personally offended. And there's no car dealerships who've ever loaned a car out to star quarterback. Remember they gave like Terrell Pryor. Would you like a test drive the car, Terrell? Bring it back next month.
Yeah.
That's a good test drive. That's a pretty good test drive. Anyway. But the one more year fund was so perfectly marketed because I think it made sense on everyone's level. It's like, oh, I can contribute to this. And the guys I already like, who've already earned their spot, have already performed, get money and don't go to the NFL. And I think that I may be wrong. Who knows? I don't know if you can prove I'm wrong or right. But I felt like that lit a light bulb over everyone's head and was like, oh, that sounds reasonable. That fits our Midwestern sensibilities here. Not let's throw money at this high school kid or let's have one guy, who, you know, one billionaire do this or that. And he's got some kind of company and what is it? And all of that. It was like, oh, okay. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I like Blake Corum. He's a good guy. Blake Corum's going to come. And I think that, and then Ohio State followed that blueprint. And then you fill in. But I think that was the moment that whoever came up with the name One More Year Fund was good marketing.
Yeah, that was smart. It did. It appealed to an already established loyalty to those players. And it made it clear, hey, we're close here, you know, and we can do this without, just going and dropping off bags of cash at an 18-year-old's house. I think Ohio State's like, well, we just saw them win a national title. We're doing it too. They went and got Will Howard and Quinshon Judkins and Caleb Downs as well. But I think retention has been a huge part of what's made Michigan Ohio State championship contenders last year and this year.
Well, and you talk to people too in around the SEC. The SEC's been doing the one more year fund for a while, right? I mean, let's just be honest. Like, you can look at a lot of the programs who have been dominant the last 15 to 20 years in the SEC, and they've had a lot of guys return that could have gone pro. It happened constantly at several different places. And so I think that keeping a team together and keeping your best players from going to the NFL by maybe adding some incentives to them has probably been going on for a while.
I'm shocked to hear this.
Deep South. Damn.
Troubled. I think you needed to market it right. So, like, noted rule follower Jim Harbaugh would be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I think it's very, very important.
And now it's funny because now all these programs have been doing a lot of this for years. You can sit back and say, see, we were doing the right thing. We were doing the right thing. See, the rules came around to align with us.
They were. But it was just, you know, not everyone got to do the right thing.
They were the only one doing it right sometimes.
Ryan Day gave a press conference yesterday and Marcus Freeman. Ryan Day says he has not spoken to Lou Holtz. The update on the Holtz Ryan Day fuse. Rob Aller, a great columnist, the Columbus Dispatch, got a hold of Lou Holtz. He, as Lou's excellent communicative ways, dodged all questions, although he did say he's picking Notre Dame because he believes they are the tougher team. So, but it was done in a very polite manner. But that might be enough for Ryan to, we might get Holtz Day 2. I think Ryan Day has learned on the job. I think, you know, we give Marcus Freeman like time to like learn on the job. Like Ryan Day, maybe he's learned on the job some things, like let's not storm around and yell at Lou Holtz, although who really cares? But anyway, there's that. He did have an interesting story. He did have a very interesting quote to me, and I think this will be play a role in going forward. He said, they asked him about the format, and he said, you know, being able to lose a game, or in his case, two, allowed them to develop across the year. But he also said, along the way, we looked at a lot of different things and metrics about playing this many games, playing our 16th game, what that was going to be like. We knew it was going to be a little bit of a battle of attrition at times. So depth was certainly a critical part of roster management and talent acquisition, but also how we practice, how we play. So we've taken all those things into consideration so that we're really, really fresh going into the end of the season. I have not heard another coach talk about that. I may have missed it. Certainly there's a lot of coaches out there. But interesting on how you play going forward in terms of not just are we practicing Oklahoma drills all the time? Are we resting? Is there any little more consideration to load management? Are we, you know, how we play? I found that to be pretty interesting because Ohio State is healthier than Notre Dame is right now, and that could play a very big role next Monday.
He lauded Larry Johnson in specific, the defensive line coach, for doing a good job of playing a lot of guys and rotating people in and out there. So I think, you know, once I'm going to guess that once they started steamrolling Tennessee, they might have had a feeling like, whoa, we could be in this thing a while here. So let's, you know, in terms of actual game management, let's play our guys and then practice. You hear it a lot from basketball coaches during the NCAA tournament. We're practicing less. We're going less time, more film, less time on your feet. I'm sure they're, you know, adapting some of those things as well. But, yeah, you got to have the bodies. And that's like what Notre Dame is doing is all the more impressive when they're playing a lot of true freshmen, you know, in key places. And they're playing well, but man, oh man, they have asked a lot of everybody on the roster, I think, to get them this far.
Yeah, that was one of the things I know we discussed with expanded playoff is at the end, you might be left with not just the best team, but certainly the most healthy team. We see a lot, obviously, in the NFL at the end. The team that advances to the Super Bowl is often the team that didn't withstand as many serious injuries, and I'll agree. Certainly with Pat, it's pretty obvious who the most healthy team is here.
Yeah, I remember Terrell Suggs of the Baltimore Ravens once said to me after in a locker room, or to others too, but he called it the NFL playoffs is the NFL's Hunger Games. and you saw Green Bay play on Sunday, brutal. The number of injuries that lacked up there, it is done. They weren't going to win that game. Speaking of Marcus Freeman and the NFL, reports from NFL Network that the Chicago Bears would like to talk to him. Now, they also...
they've talked to everyone but Ara Parseghian. I mean, Jesus, their list is like 12 people, isn't it?
Well, you know, Kevin Warren runs the team. He's the president, and he was in favor of a 2018-20 team conference. So, you know, I mean, they did interview Matt Campbell of Iowa State. So it would make sense that they would be interested in Marcus Freeman. But look, at Marcus Freeman is having a massive glow up. We said he is a star turn. Everybody likes him, and he's doing a great job. He's the new guy on the block that everyone's excited about, but he's coaching in game really, really well. And people are paying attention to that. I can't imagine. I don't know. I don't see Marcus Freeman leaving right now for the Chicago Bears. And I would not recommend that he do it. I think he's a young guy and he's got a long future, and the NFL isn't going anywhere. And he's got Notre Dame kind of popping. And I think there's another gear for Notre Dame. I know they're in the championship game, but their level of recruiting can finally get over that hump that they want. I think a lot of people are going to want to play for Notre Dame, and they can be very selective in who they take. Pat, your thoughts on Marcus Freeman as an NFL quarterback coaching candidate right now, like on Tuesday, he's standing behind a podium somewhere. What's the likelihood of that, or just sometime in the future?
He's clearly an attractive candidate for many reasons, and we talked about him some on the podcast. He's doing a very good job coaching his team in game and preparation wise. He's got the ability to connect with people. He presents incredibly well. But no, I totally agree with you that I would not do it right now. I don't trust the Bears as an organization. I wouldn't want to necessarily jump into that mosh pit, especially in that division. But beyond that, he just turned 39 on Friday. He's got many years of great coaching ahead of him, and Notre Dame is poised. I mean, they're right there. Again, I said they played a lot of freshmen this year, and they're really good freshmen. They have got a good young nucleus on the team right now. They should be really good again next year, and the recruiting should take care of itself. If they are able to add those strategic portal additions, and they've got a couple guys, even during the playoff here, to help them out in the portal. So if I were him, boy, I would not be rushing off to the NFL. He may, you know, one day want to go, but age 39, you got it rolling at a place like Notre Dame, ride it out.
Well, and you know, he got that big new contract, whatever that was, maybe a few weeks ago. I'm assuming that the reasoning behind that contract was probably some NFL interests that Notre Dame administrators were getting. I mean, obviously he has done a great job and won a lot of games, so that gives you a new contract often, but when you have, there's NFL buzz out there, I'm sure that was part of it. A lot of these contracts, right, are able to get out, especially for NFL jobs. But it did at least say something to me that he agreed to that. And with them right in the middle of the championship run, I kind of agree with Pat. Like, maybe this is something that he does down the road a little bit. But it does seem like he's got more to do in college and all that.
Keep your hands off Marcus Freeman, please. I think Notre Dame's potential, they've whatever happens on Monday night, they have made a program changing narrative run here. And Marcus Freeman, as you look at all those freshmen that Pat mentioned that are participating, is recruiting really well for Notre Dame standards, which always recruits well. They always have a lot of good players, but as he fills out that depth and gets that thing going, and and continues to develop players. I just think Notre Dame's potential of it's going to be very, very hard. Every year, it's going to be very hard to make the championship game. It's like making a Super Bowl, right? Franchises go decades without doing it. But Notre Dame, I think, is going to be in this mix. The playoff is very favorable to them. And like we talked about, they just made $20 million in this playoff. They've got money. They've got commitment. The school's going to be totally behind them. I think he's in the right spot. And I think, you know, look, if it's the Chiefs want you, it's one thing. If it's the Bears, it's another. Even with Caleb Williams and all of that. So we'll see what happens Monday. But Marcus Freeman, then again, they could pull the victory on Monday and become even bigger. Ryan Day had been talked at times as a NFL coach, and maybe it's still there. I'm not sure that I have no idea what Ryan Day. Ryan Day's situation is just amazing because he could be leading a parade through Columbus in a week and a half, and have the same people that wouldn't buy tickets to their first round playoff game and Bucknut 43 on social media criticizing him. I mean, remember the representative that wanted to ban a felony.
Yeah.
He wanted a felony if you plant a flag in the middle of Ohio Stadium, was like they should have fired Ryan Day on the field. Like even that guy wanted Ryan Day hired.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean it was nasty. And yes, 7 weeks later he could be the toast of the town, which would be pretty hilarious.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back with more. We got some excellent topics here. Couple items before we get to this other topic. TV ratings. We got the Notre Dame Penn State rating for Thursday night. It was about 17.8 million, which is not great for a semifinal. It's a lot of people. It's very good for college football. Hard to really compare because those semifinals were often on New Year's Day, which is always going to get a high. I don't know what to make of that. It's a good number. I'm sure they wanted higher. What do you think, Ross?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were maybe expecting something more in the 20s, which a lot of the previous ones have been. But like you said, you know, a holiday brings more viewers, people off work and all that stuff. So I'm sure that had a big part of it. But let's remember, you know, why it was Thursday night and not Saturday, a weekend, right? It's the NFL play that Saturday, obviously, and play the playoffs that Saturday. So you couldn't college football deciding to not go up against the NFL, and the NFL and college couldn't really work out anything. And so they're left with Thursday and Friday night, you're going to have, 5, 10, maybe 15% of a lower viewership. Just, you know, when you compare the a weekend or especially a holiday to a weeknight.
Yeah, I expected the number to be a little higher, but whatever. I guess it's too soon to get the number on Texas and Ohio State.
It's probably out by the time this has actually been hit, but yeah, I don't have it yet.
Okay. You're playing them when you're playing them. I can't get too wound up about it. This is great. This is terrible. Any of that sort of thing. I mean, you are where you are on the calendar, and the NFL is where it is. It is, and that's just kind of going to be the deal. So,
yeah, the TV ratings can be over, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted to watch, you were able to watch. Also, the NFL wildcard games, the first four of them were terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Lopsided. They should go back to a 4-team playoff in the NFL.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Who let some of these teams in? Shouldn't the Bengals have been in instead of somebody else? Yeah.
Get in price at this moment. Tickets were really high for a while. They have dropped 2 tickets at the 50-yard line for the title game. $4,400 right now at StubHub.
Oof.
That's very high. I get, but it was higher. That doesn't count the fees.
Yeah.
The FBI watch list psychopath fan that walks up and says, I'd like one seat, the worst in the stadium.
$1,400.
That's your get in price.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
Yes. Is there a pole I can stand behind? 1400.
That's sure. That's smaller than what I saw a few days ago.
Yeah.
The get-in was 1900. Yeah.
They always drop. If you're buying tickets for one of these things, wait. Everyone panics, buys them immediately because they want to secure their tickets. It always drops. You will see astounding numbers right after. Watch when the Super Bowl gets set. It'll be 15. If they get like a Bills Lions, it'll be like $15,000 to get in the game. It'll be insane. God. But yeah. Then it will drop. Not like, I mean, it's still going to be like a decent used car, but yeah. It's going to drop. So yeah. 1400 and get in. That's where we're at. All right. Also, over the weekend, a little online story, pretty much. NIL agent named Noah Reisenfeld, I think is how you'd pronounce it. He was on a podcast, and I don't know the podcast. Somebody can say it. Ross, maybe you know it. I'll go to you on this. He was saying that his NIL agency, and he said all NIL agencies take 20% cut from deals made for players. And he justified that compared, he said people eyes pop out because the NFL is only 5% for an agent, or the NBA is 5%. The NFL is 3, or maybe it's NFL is 5, NBA is 3. But he said, look, if you get 3% of a $10 million deal, you get $300,000. If you get 20% of a $1 million deal, you know, colleges are paid less. So that's how the agencies make it. There's some blowback that not all agencies do that at all, but certainly there are some cuts up to 20%. But it's out of line with what is the internet was not kind to this comment. You have more information, and like people were buzzing about this even at the NCAA, right, Ross?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is not, you know, it's not that. I think the podcast was like Be in the Know. I think it's called the podcast that he was on. And this is not like anything surprising, right? I think we've heard that is the going rate from a lot of NIL agents, from 15 to as much as 30% is what I heard. And it is part of the reason the NCAA was and is trying to establish like a registry for agents to register and all that stuff and try to protect athletes as much as they can when it comes to what agent fees and such are. And so this did get a lot of attention and shined a light on some of these some of these NIL contracts with NIL agents, many of them who aren't necessarily registered or vetted, and this is happening quite a bit. I think I understand what Noah, the NIL agent Reisenfeld, is saying, right? His point was, if you compare a $10 million NFL player deal to a $1 million college deal, an agent may make $300,000 on that NFL deal. And if you take the same percentage, you would make a lot less right on that college deal. And so you raise the percentage to get the revenue that comes to the agent up a little bit. I mean, my issue with it is, you know, obviously these players are paid lower, like I just said, than NFL. These salaries are lower. So why would you take more away from a player making not as much money? It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, in our country, the tax rate is what it is for a reason, right? The rich or normally taxed more because they make more. You would think in a college player would be taxed less by an NIL agent because he makes less.
I think 20% is outlandish. I do think you're taking advantage of less experienced people in the market, and people, like you said, are getting compensated less. Just because they're getting compensated less, it's not their job to make sure you're getting the same cut as the agent. I would figure that's kind of the agents walking in knowing, okay, we're not going to make as much off the college guys, but when we get to the NFL with them, that's where our relationship with them will pay off. If it were, one thing I don't know whether it was clear on this or not, Is it 20% for NIL appearances, or is it 20% of everything? Because there's a difference between a percentage you get off of a contract versus a percentage you get off of appearance opportunities. So that's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, that's a big thing, because the reason that an NFL agent makes 5% of the salary is because when Jaden Daniels goes second in the draft last year, the salary is set. There's not a negotiation. He's not a free agent. Pretty much anybody, and sometimes players don't have agents. They'll have a lawyer look over the contract, or they'll just trust the union on the contract. And so they're saying, why am I even giving 5% when an NBA player is at 3%? It's all slotted. You don't have to find a place to work. So there's very little work at that point. And agents don't have to do as much, although they do a lot. The agent business is not that lucrative. You can maybe make it. If this was a big business in college, but then when they do marketing deals, the marketing agent, which is sometimes the same company, sometimes it's a different person, they get at least 10%. So if your client is Patrick Mahomes and he's doing all of his commercials, you might be making 10% off of that, or Patrick can negotiate with you down. This is business. I thought the reaction, this was completely overblown. Not everyone is doing 20% though. I will say that, but if you are, I don't know who's going to be the number one pick next. If you're Arch Manning, you're not paying 20%. You may be paying zero because they want you later, as you alluded. If you are like a guy who was like second team all conference in the Missouri Valley, and you have 56 career tackles, and you're trying to get yourself to the Big 12, and you need somebody to call all over and negotiate and market you and make and all that, I don't know that you're not that service isn't worth 20%. I just don't know. I think there's an easy knee-jerk social media reaction where it's like, these guys are getting robbed by these mean, faceless agents. Like, there's a lot of work in this. If for most of these guys, they're not making $1 million deal. But if you want to, if most of these guys have got $100,000, $200,000, something like that, maybe. And it's like, if you want to charge, you want 3%, check the quality of agent you're going to get is going to get $3,000 for all that work. It's not going to be like, you have to, I've done all sorts of deals in business, in Hollywood, in documentaries, in books. Like, I have agents, they don't charge any 3%. I wish. Like, you're shopping deals and you're trying to find a place to go. It costs. And I know that everyone went crazy on it, but I was like, and if you don't like it, you know, the real answer here is to make them employees and they have a union. So I don't know what the NCAA wants to do, but they don't want to do that. That would be the best way to protect players if that's your goal, which I don't think is really their goal. But there's a lot of work that I don't know that this is that bad as much as it's just like people need. It's classic social media. There's a clip from a podcast. We don't hear all the context and everyone flips out over what they heard. And this guy's evil.
Yeah, I mean, all right, fair point.
And I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm saying the hubbub around that. I'm not saying either of you guys said that, but the whole thing was just like, oh my God, this is robbery. We got to do something. And it's like, let's make some more regulations. Like, those regulations never seem to really work.
Yeah, 20% seems exorbitant to me. And yes, I know that agents in non-sports areas and media parts will take a decent amount of your money. But in the community that we're dealing with here of 17 to 21 year old or 22 or 23, 24, who the hell knows these days, the level of probably inexperience of who you're dealing with, I think if you're coming in at a really high percentage, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Well, speaking of the transfer portal and NIL and all this, there was another theory out there on social media that Caitlin Clark, if you're familiar with, you can pre-order your Epic Athletes.
There we go. I was waiting.
I was just doing a service for the listeners here. Pre-order and available now. Be out in spring. But I digress. Caitlin Clark may have played a massive role in college football's power balance next year. And you guys want to hear this domino theory?
Sure.
Okay. So Caitlin Clark, this theory doesn't really, I don't think it really holds up, but I'm going with it anyway. it might hold up. I don't know. You don't know. Anyway, last year in the Elite Eight, Iowa and Caitlin Clark played LSU, and Caitlin Clark dropped 41 on the Bayou Bengals there. Had 9 threes, 12 rebounds, 7 assists, 2. She based total Caitlin Clark level domination, and Iowa went to the Final Four, and LSU lost. They were the defending national champs. In that game, her primary defender was Haley Van Lith, who had transferred in from Louisville, who's an excellent offensive player, but had no match to Caitlin Clark. No shame in that. They should have put Flauje Johnson on her, but that's Kim Mulkey's decision. She has many national champions. I have none, but I thought they should put Flauje on Caitlin Clark. Maybe they had a chance. They didn't, whatever. Haley Van Lith had a tough night. It was a rough night. Someone drops 41 on you in a college game. Soon after that loss, Haley Van Lith decided to transfer out of Louisville.
No, out of LSU.
I'm sorry. And the theory was that Caitlin Clark just so dominated her that LSU lost confidence in her. Now, that here's where people like me who know a great deal about women's basketball, because I wrote Caitlin Clark Epic Athletes, which is available for pre-order right now. Kim Mulkey said, like, we want Haley Van Lith back. And Haley Van Lith said, I really want more shots. She was a volume shooter at Louisville. She wants to come off the pick and roll, prepare for the WNBA, all that. But whatever. Haley Van Lith transfers to TCU. And it's worked out quite well. She's doing very well there. And they are like 18-1. And it's all banging along there. But Haley Van Lith heads to TCU to be the primary offensive focus. And that leaves a little bit of a log jam at TCU. And they had previously had Haley Cavender, who is one of the Cavender twins. She has a twin sister, Hannah.
Okay, now I see where we're going.
Yes. So Haley and Hannah had become famous on TikTok playing at Fresno State because they did lots of dribbling, trick dribbles, and synchronized stuff. And they also happen to be extremely telegenic, photogenic. And that formula will work on TikTok.
And it was during the pandemic.
Pandemic, right. Yeah. A lot of people just watching these two do trick dribbles. And I'm sure it was, you know, all that. So they left Fresno State, went to Miami 2 years ago, led the Canes to an Elite Eight. They became massively famous. And then they both decided to take a year off or even just retire from basketball. So they did not play last year. Hannah was probably more likely to just be done. Haley said, I'm going to come back for this current season, 24-25, but I'm going to do it at TCU. She had verbally committed to play at TCU. And she would play the same position as Haley Van Lith, who then had been, per this theory, been run out of LSU by Caitlin Clark. Well, the same day Haley Van Lith commits to TCU, Haley Cavender says, you know what? I'm not going to go to TCU now. I'm going to go to Miami. And at that same time, her twin sister, Hannah, said, I'm coming back to Miami. So they both end up going to Miami. And Haley Van Lith goes to TCU. So the theory is Van Lith ran Cavender to Miami. And that they're going well. They're doing, having a great season. Haley's averaging almost 18 points a game. Everything's going well. Well, who is Haley Cavender's boyfriend, but none other than Carson Beck, the Georgia quarterback who got injured in the SEC championship game, declared for the NFL, found some lukewarm response, and then decided to sign a deal for 1 year at about $3 million, allegedly, reportedly by, I think, Bruce Feldman. So I'm going to go with a pretty good deal to play next year at Miami, giving the Hurricanes, who I think have a ton of potential. And if there was one team that I actually would have liked to see in the playoff, I'm not saying they're the most deserving of the left out, but I would have liked to see them in the playoff because Cam Ward was so good and this was a playoff with a very little good quarterback play. They get Carson Beck, who, if he is healthy, would be at least not much of a drop off, if not a continuation, if not even an improvement for the Hurricanes. So Mario Cristobal, not only does he have millions of dollars in NIL to spend, not only does he have that South Florida sunshine, he's got the guy's girlfriend on campus.
Yeah, that helps.
That'll close the deal. Finally, we get to
the last domino of this domino row. That'll close the deal.
So here is the domino.
Yeah.
That Caitlin Clark in the Elite Eight last year is the reason Miami might win the national championship 2 years later. It's all Caitlin Clark's fault.
Because
what do you think, Pat?
Makes perfect sense. So basically, now what we're saying is the LSU coach whose name, Kim Mulkey. Kim Mulkey made a bad defensive assignment,
yes.
And that's changed everything.
Heck, we could go to that.
Go keep going back.
Flajay Johnson is terrific athlete. She put her on there. Yeah. She was her length was bothering Caitlin on a couple switch offs. Anyway, I digress.
So bad defensive assignment by Kim Mulkey leads Carson Beck to Miami.
Yes.
Tremendous. This is, look, that's quality domino theory there. That's what people come to this podcast for.
There you go.
I'm down with it.
True.
I'm with it all the way.
Probably not, but whatever. Eh. Yeah.
Sounds good to me, Dan.
That's pretty big. Now, we'll see if Carson Beck comes back 100%, comes back, like Brock Purdy did from major elbow injury. If he does.
Yeah, surgery, right?
Yeah. Theoretically, a good get for Miami, and we'll see what they can do with it.
Won't participate in spring, won't throw for several months. And there's a lot of people that are probably going to be shocked at the number, right, that's been reported. The first number was 4 million. Now the second number, like you said, from The Athletic is 3 million. Odds are it's probably in between those two, I would guess, especially with bonuses and performance stuff. And people might be really surprised by that. Shouldn't be for a number of reasons. He kind of checks the box of the highest paid type of player to demand a contract like that, an experienced quarterback in the SEC who's in the portal, who turned down the NFL in going to the NFL draft. So he kind of checks all the box for a really high price player. Plus, maybe the biggest thing, and I'm not going to get too far into the house stuff, but people are front-loading. Schools are front-loading contracts to pay amounts before July 1, before there's some restriction in regulation, you might say, in oversight on a lot of these deals. So everybody's kind of putting all their money here into the market right now, and that's a big part of this as well.
This is all courtesy of at Mr. Bill 11.
It's his theory. He's the one with the
domino
theory.
Toppler is Mr. Bill 11. Perfect.
It's possible. I'm going to say that Van Lith wanted more shots, wasn't going to get him at LSU. I'm going to say that Haley wanted to play with Hannah. But I like it. It was enough to do a segment on.
It's better than Sir Yacht. It's fine. Mr. Bill 11.
Mr. Bill 11. Hashtag doomsayer. That's what he says. Miami remains fascinating to me because they got almost their whole offensive line back. They've got these running backs, Jordan Lyle, Mark Fletcher. They brought in CJ Daniels from LSU as their wide receiver. Like, there's a lot there. And if Carson Beck is healthy and that, this is just, they didn't break through this year. That loss to Syracuse got them.
Right.
But they were close.
Yeah, they were close. Changed defensive coordinators in the fallout of that. Lance Guidry out, but Shannon Dawson's still there calling plays, and I think he's a really good offensive coordinator. So, heck yeah, they've got a great chance.
Yeah, I think people kind of write them off, and maybe this can't, but they were close. And if they gotten a chance, I just don't, Cam Ward was so good. They lost two very close games, both on the road. They had a tough go of it. And I would have liked to see, I'm interested to see what Miami can do, but if you want to know what a recruiting advantages are, that is one of them. the best transfer guy in the portal's girlfriend just happens to go here, and I've got a bag of money, and I'm located in Coral Gables. I don't think that was a hard decision for Carson Beck.
No, didn't take long.
And my offense just got a guy to be the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah,
and he saw Cam Ward. yeah. right, too. I mean, did the same thing Cam Ward did, basically, right? Power four starter, going to the NFL, decides not to, go to Miami instead and get as much money as you may have had as a whatever, third, fourth round pick in the NFL, and you're still in college and you're living in Miami and et cetera. So I'm sure he saw that. He saw what Shannon Dawson, as you mentioned, the OC there, pretty well respected guy, and certainly did well down there with Cam Ward, and I'm guessing that was a big draw as well.
All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, Ross, you had a story on a proposal that is circulating from the power conferences that want to remake NCAA governance, which is, you know, people sort of tune out, but the big part, and championship structure, shifting more authority to the power leagues over rulemaking, poly decisions, and even postseason events. The proposal, a collaboration of the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and ACC, would manage postseason championships, including March Madness. It is a working document. What do we got here?
Yeah, you know, Dan is
I'm
part
nervous.
Of,
I'm yeah. nervous.
Yeah.
You and probably a few others, after this came out. To coincide with the House settlement, the NCAA is in the middle of trying to reshape its governance, and that's something that's everybody's behind. Even the lower levels of Division I, they're basically saying, "Look, you know, the House settlement brings in more professionalism, all that stuff. So we got to change all these rules and give the power conferences more control over." Like rulemaking and other policy and legislative decisions. But what wasn't in the conversation was postseason championships, NCAA championships that have been run by the organization, the NCAA, for decades and run, you know, for the most part, pretty well, I think, for a long time. Well, this proposal from the power leagues not only grants themselves authority over a lot of rulemaking, playing rules and other policy stuff, but also would put them in charge of these postseason championships, which would mean that they would have control, right, over tournament format, revenue distribution. And maybe the most important, they say to them, is the makeup of the selection committee and the selection committee process for March Madness, volleyball tournament, softball tournament, all that stuff. But it would give them oversight to also change some of this stuff, whether it's format or how the revenue is distributed. This is a proposal that is getting already a lot of pushback and will be a pretty big topic this week at the NCAA convention, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Nashville. Where all the leaders kind of gather to discuss legislative matters and things like this. This will be a pretty big topic. This is nowhere near, you know, coming to a vote, but it would apparently take a vote of the full membership. All 32 Division I conferences would have to vote on this to give away the oversight of the championships to the power conferences. And I'm just going to guess from early intel that they would not, the FCS and non-football playing schools conferences would not vote for this. So this is going to be a really interesting battle. And somebody at the FCS level in my story kind of framed it to me as this could be a fight over the future of college athletics. Quote, at some point, we're going to have to call their bluff and say, take your ball and go, this person, FCS executive, told me. Look, we've talked a lot about this podcast of the A4, Power 4, and how much they have through the years, especially the last calendar year, kind of gained authority and power, right? They've gotten more CFP revenue distribution over threats of leaving last spring. They ended up finalizing more revenue for their school, the Big Ten and SEC specifically, but also the Power Four. You know, they were in charge of the House settlement without really involving many other conferences in the Division I level, even the Group of Five conferences. They pursued the House settlement and agreed to it. And now there's kind of this, right? So there's a lot of frustration brewing. And if you talk to people at the FCS and non-football playing level, they'll tell you that this may be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Are they going to screw up? Are they going to screw up March Madness, Pat?
Let's cut to the chase here on a couple of things. Are they going to alter who gets in the tournament? We already know they want more, and they're going to get more teams in the tournament. They're going to screw that up. We know that. That's coming. But are they going to alter who gets automatic bids? Are they going to take away automatic bids from smaller conferences? And are they going to take away revenue shares from the small or lower that? And if so, and I would imagine that's the end goal here, why the hell would anybody go along with that?
They shouldn't. No. And this is ridiculous. These guys have lost the freaking plot.
Totally. They've already got all the advantages. They have every advantage. And you're still trying to squeeze more of them out of the Quinnipiacs and the Fairleigh Dickinsons and the James Madisons and the, you know, Utah States. I mean, what the hell are you doing?
When you got a 16-11 team here, it needs to get in. Sometimes these commissioners, and sometimes they mean well, and sometimes they've just lost perspective. They act like they're NFL self-made billionaires that are trying to run that league instead of stewards of something that is much bigger than them. It has to mean more than just them. And how do I gain a slight advantage so my ninth place team gets in and I get a little bit more of a revenue share? Not everything here has to be how much can I squeeze this down to nothing. And I know they all gave these quotes. We wouldn't. This is a treasure. We don't want to change anything.
Then why are you even talking about it? Why?
And you guys come and go. Yeah. Kevin Warren came into college football, tried to shut down the 2020 season, and then ran an expansion that upset everything and destroyed a 108-year league in the Pac-12, and then bolted to the Bears. He got little shots on his resume, and then he left. These guys aren't there. You didn't create this. You didn't create anything. You guys started as assistant ticket director somewhere, and you're pretty smart, and you made it. But whatever. This isn't your thing. Just trying to get one more little team in is ridiculous. You have the perfect event. This sport, very few people care about in the country, care for 3 weeks. It's impossible to do. Everybody is trying to create leagues. And we got a simulator golf league going out. Right? Everyone's trying to create something. You have it. You have this bit of Americana. And you're so lost in spreadsheets and power dynamics and grievance. And I need more money. You don't need more money. You need to spend less money. And it's just all it's ridiculous. Do not mess with March Madness. It's perfect.
Even if the one thing they maybe think they can get over on this is the makeup of the selection committees. Again, why? You know, what is it that has been flawed about the makeup of the selection committee for the basketball tournaments? I don't know. I mean, are we giving too many voices to the friggin' A-10? Is it just terrible because the A-10, you know, some AD from there gets a say on whether the 10th place SEC team gets in the basketball tournament? Or are we really trickling this down to softball selection and whatever and turning that into, you know, some sort of excuse to try to grab hold of everything? Whatever the reasoning is, like, I want to get down there in Nashville and get in front of people and say, what is the goal? You tell us, and then tell us why anybody should go along with it.
Well, I think that is the, you know, of the three kind of concepts around the postseason championships that they would control, right? Format and revenue and selection committee makeup and process. The last one is the one that they talk about openly much more is and there's some things like, I think it was last year, SEC didn't have a representative on the baseball selection committee at one point. So that was raised.
Seemed to
publicly.
Work out okay for them. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, in the rulemaking legislative stuff, like the Big Ten doesn't have a representative on the board of governors right now. So those things are raised.
And nobody cares about that.
That
all can be fixed. Nobody's caring about that. We care about the NCAA. I have been as big a critic of the NCAA as anyone ever. It's my whole career. But they do a great job running these tournaments from the cross country to the baseball in Omaha to the Frozen Four to the wrestling to, like, they do a great job. This is a national thing. It's not how much can I get a little more power and a little more. And yes, trust us. We have good intentions. Just lay off it. Just know you're late. You're not the king of this whole thing, even though you get to fly around in private jets and you make millions of dollars. Like, you didn't create this thing. It was here before you. It's going to be here after you, hopefully.
Well, and you probably saw from my story. I mean, when I was alerted the folks at the Power Leagues that I had gotten at least portions of this proposal, they actually came right and went on the record and confirmed that it existed. And but one of the messages, as you both probably saw in that story, that they wanted to get across with some of their comments was, you know, we want to continue broad involvement in the NCAA basketball tournament and others. And, you know, you had Jim Phillips calling it a national treasure, and even Greg Sankey saying that he loved the Cinderella stories and we respect that reality. And Brett Yormark saying similar things about not compromising college athletic, which makes college athletics so special. So they are trying at least to say, we don't plan on making any drastic changes. But I think on the FCS and non-football playing conferences, when you talk to them about this, there's a fear that eventually they will make changes at the detriment of the FCS and non-football playing, whether that's the makeup of these committees, but more importantly, it's the revenue distribution being reduced. Because right now, and Pat probably is more up on this than me, but I think it's like, every win that you get in the NCAA tournament, men's tournament, is a unit, and it's the same amount. So a winner gets that same amount, and they don't, you know, FCS non-football playing schools don't want to change that amount.
God forbid. St. Peter's gets the same amount as Kentucky. It's just, you know, terrible. Terrible. Yeah, St. Peter's with a leaky gym ceiling, you know? Like, God, we don't want them getting the same amount of money as us.
The appeal of this event is the St. Peter's. They play a intricate formula. And, okay, I'm going to trust these guys. Just, I would be trying to preserve it by saying we're going to mandate that everyone has a voice on this, because this is a national treasure. So let's make, you don't put national treasures in the hands of one person.
No.
You say, okay, this is Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Nobody gets to touch it.
Right.
Or this is the, we put that in the Smithsonian so no one can put it off on auction. It's just like, I get the fact they all were immediately saying that is kind of the tell. Like, they know, like, this might feel,
And the other thing, like, the small colleges, the FCS schools, they've already been bent over once by these guys with the house settlement, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna go ahead and settle this. You're not gonna have a say in it, and we're gonna charge you disproportionately. Deal with it. That was their solution there. So why would they possibly think that they're gonna get a fair deal in other areas?
The real issue here, you know, is gonna come down to if the power leagues don't compromise in some way, then, and they don't get the vote to make this happen, do they withdraw from the NCAA? And it's been a lot. Obviously, that's been a talking point for years, that at some point we're, you know, heading toward a breaking point. And I think between the NCAA and the power leagues, and I think for the last year, I and certainly others have written in earnest that the House case and the revenue sharing will lead to some kind of break, whether it's informal or formal. And I think I think we're seems like we're heading toward that. Now, some will say that the power leagues agreed to stay in the NCAA for 10 years as part of the House settlement. But it's my understanding that if you pay the back damages, you continue to pay and agree to pay, you know, they could withdraw.
If so there is a break, it is not because of the House settlement. It's because some commissioners thought they were more important than they are. That's what happened. And they convinced their university presidents to go along with it. There's no need to break. No. There's plenty of money. They can cry all they want, but there's plenty of money. There's too much money, if anything. All right, let's end with a positive story, shall we?
Good idea.
Now that we're all angry. Yeah, now we're all angry.
I'm sweating here. I'm getting
God,
mad.
Man, this is screwing March Madness up. Ugh. Mount Juliet, Tennessee. Mount Juliet, Tennessee. So the fine men and women at the Mount Juliet Police Department, they were working on a Sunday night, and they saw a car with the license plate. The license plate reader cameras alerted officers to a vehicle linked to a man who was wanted for failure to appear on illegal drug charges out of Rutherford County, which I don't know if that's the same county. Anyway, the officer pulled over the 34-year-old on Lebanon Road near Park Glen Drive, if you're familiar with the area. And indeed, he was him, and he had an active warrant. And so they booked him into the Wilson County jail. Okay, it's a different county, doing their job. But the issue was, while he was operating the motor vehicle and they pulled him over, he was working as a pizza delivery driver. So he was mid-delivery when he got pinched for this warrant. The old warrant, they'll get you on the illegal drug charges. And I actually kind of applaud this guy. He seems like, generally, if you're a drug dealer, you're not also delivering pizzas. So maybe he had turned his life around since the illegal, but whatever. That's an aside. He can tell it to the judge. But the Mount Juliet Police Department, in a service to the community, because it often says serve and protect, right? Well, they're protecting the community from this illegal drug dealing charge warrant. And then to serve, the police officer delivered the pizza.
Excellent. Excellent. I thought you were going to tell me that somebody like sued for lack of pizza, not getting their pizza.
Or they ate it. Got a reward.
Yeah, or the cops ate
it. That was a positive story. Back the blue, Pat. Good. I think we can all back this. To ensure the customer wasn't left hungry, one of our officers stepped in and completed the delivery. Just another way we serve, even if it means delivering pizza, the department said.
Outstanding.
Officer of the year, huh?
Yeah, the PR person for that department gets a blue star for putting that out there, too. Good job.
You know they were thinking about confiscating the pizza as evidence.
Oh.
I mean, you had to. I don't blame them. Like,
they would have never made it to the evidence room, the pizza.
Pizza? I didn't see any pizza.
No. But I was thinking that this story would end with this man, this criminal, sprinkling some kind of drug on the pizza.
Ooh.
like that one story we had.
That's true.
Yeah. I thought maybe that's how the story was going to end, was more like cocaine laced pizza.
Mm. Well, yeah, we don't, maybe there's a follow up. This is from Channel 4 WSMV. So out of Nashville. So maybe there's more, but they have a picture of the woman and the officer.
Yeah. With the pizza delivering it.
Yeah, sweet. It looks like Little Caesars. Yeah, it's Little Caesars.
Okay. All right.
Take
what you can get there.
Maybe she had a wild night. Maybe she had a night she wasn't expecting after eating that pizza. How about, though, like, you know, you're sitting there waiting for your pizza, and then, like, there's an officer at the door. Like, nobody wants that.
No.
Like, there's no good
reason.
You go
to the door with great trepidation, and then they're like, here's your pizza.
Why is this cop? And then, like, this is not just... Like, this guy's got his vest and, you know, like, oh, no, what's going on? And he's like, here, have your pizza. Do you tip
him? All I did was order a pizza. And a cop shows up at the door.
Anyway, great work. Great work, Manchu. Do your civic duty, man. Do your civic duty down there. Good job. All right, that's our show. We'll be back Thursday to talk more about the national championship game and all the other things, and more about this threat to March Madness that'll come because the NCAA convention this weekend. Both of you guys will be there. So we appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media. We will talk to you later.